If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's time to get your goalkeeping groove on with the ultimate at-home goalkeeping workout. Want to top up on your training? Join ex-Premier League stopper Richard Lee from the comfort of your own home. For 30 minutes, three times per week, Rich will take to Instagram Live and run viewers through an easy-to-follow training routine developed from his years of professional experience working with first-class goalkeepers and goalkeeping coaches. Work on and improve speed, strength, technique, and many other aspects of your game while engaging the core muscle groups and athletic ability required to be a top goalkeeper.
Just there, nice and simple. Just right hand to left hand, get the ball moving, get a little bit higher. Good, right into some straight into some goalkeeping core. So ball out in front, nice squat down and up.
All you need is a few essential household items, a good Wi-Fi connection, and a small space at home. With a weekly mindset session and goalkeeper quiz to boot, consider this your one-stop shop for goalkeeping growth. Join the Joe Wicks of goalkeeping today on a free one-week trial with no obligation to continue. Visit goalkeepersunion.net/workout for more details.
You've been brilliant. You always are. Well done. Great attitude. I'll see you shortly. Take care.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Well, hello there.
Hello, Richard. Football is nearly back, mate. We're recording this towards the end and football is just, what, a week away?
I know, finally. It's been a long, long wait, but it's actually quite exciting. When you see how the games are staggered, the amount of games that are going to be on TV, it could be an incredible couple of months.
Yeah, potential overkill. But for goalkeeping, are you concerned, by the way? I know we've done a lot of chats on Instagram Live about the fear of goalkeepers coming back and the mistakes that might be made in those opening few games and those mistakes being highlighted. But when goalkeepers return in what has been quite an extraordinarily unique situation, do you have concerns?
I think it'll be a really interesting period of time. And the key things for me will be the fact there's no crowd, which means that communication is going to be vital for a goalkeeper. They're going to be heard that much more. So I think we'll really see who the good communicators are. I think the fact there is no crowd, I think the adrenaline levels is going to be a little bit different. I think the instant feedback that you would get from the crowd if you made a great save or a mistake isn't going to be there. So I think there's lots of different challenges. I think we'll also see the goalkeepers that have worked really hard during lockdown and maybe those that switched off a little bit because, you know, there was a chance that we wouldn't finish the season. And a few that may just mentally have switched off and may struggle to get themselves back into match fitness very, very quickly. And if they don't, because they haven't got a long time to prepare for these games, then they could get found out. So I think we'll see a really interesting few weeks.
And up next, we, of course, have a very good guest. Really, really good interview this. But I should say, because I do think it's important, that while it was a good interview, there was a period. I don't know whether you noticed this, Rich, halfway through the podcast when clearly we're all in lockdown at the moment. We're all stuck at home. We're all in the confines of our own house. But you can quite audibly hear his kids and his missus having some sort of row in the background.
All adds to the drama.
It does indeed all add to the drama. Remember, if you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union or email hello@goalkeepersunion.net. This week's guest is a goalkeeper who did not step between the sticks until he was 15 years old, yet little more than 12 months later, he joined Charlton, where he eventually landed his first pro contract under Alan Kerbishley. He earned his crust in a promotion and award-winning campaign on loan at Accrington Stanley before former Addicks boss Alan Pardew signed him for Newcastle United, where he now resides alongside Martin Dubravka and Carl Darlow, an Ireland international, and I'm personally delighted to say a fellow appreciator of Les Miserables, Rob Elliott. Welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
That's probably one of the best intros I've ever had, especially Les Mis dropped in there. You know what I mean? I don't shout that too proudly, but no, it's lovely. Another admirer's class.
What a showpiece, mate. I tell you what, I cannot get enough of that. The soundtrack, that people talk about gym music. I listen to that in the gym.
Oh, 100%. The film track, obviously, with Hugh Jackman and that. I turned up to training the other day. The doc has to do our temperatures, and I had that blaring out. And yeah, you forget where you are for a second. I was like, "Oh, let's turn that down." There's like sort of like cool hip hop and like all the latest stuff going on, which I don't even know. And I'm listening to like "Look Down, Look Down." I was like, I turned up and like I've got a little theatre bath. It's about 8 years old, but I absolutely love it. So I'm just like, amazing. Oh God! I think security don't even let me free them. They know where I am. They're like, stop me at the gate every day.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. It's a real man likes Les Mis, Rob.
Thank
a real
you.
Man.
Thank you.
Great to have you on the podcast. We start our podcast now with a customary three questions, which Richard Lee heads up, don't you, Rich?
I do indeed. And actually, the first of these questions is going to be slightly different for you because ordinarily you ask people, what are the gloves that you wore during your career? Or what gloves are you currently wearing? But yours is a little bit different because the gloves you're currently wearing is actually a company you have an involvement in. So what gloves do you currently wear?
So I wear the one glove, which I've done for about 6 or 7 years now. And basically, long story short, Miles and Will, who run them, two brothers, done an unbelievable job with them. And I sort of fell in love with them. You know, as goalkeepers, we can be very, like, some people can wear anything. And that's what I was like before. But then when I got the one glove on, it just sort of sat with me true. And I was just buzzing with it. And then I think me and Miles and Will get on so well. And it just naturally made sense to me to come on board with the company. And touch wood, it's gone from strength to strength. You know, I would like to put that down to me coming on board, but to be honest with you, that's more Miles and Will. I can't take too much credit, but no, it's nice. So it gives me a different perspective. You know, I don't sort of worry about the gloves I'm wearing, which is good because I'm always comfortable in them. But then I'm always looking at like trying to help the brand and sort of looking past the sort of simple things of what shall I wear this year? As in, you're thinking a year ahead and stuff. So we're looking at models for not next season, the season after already, and. It's been good. It's nice, isn't it? Like we're all goalkeeper geeks, let's be honest. So it's nice to be involved in that.
Kit, what has been your favourite kit that you've ever had, and at which club?
Do you know what it is? It's this. I think I put it on Insta the other day. Actually, it's pink Charlton kit when I was. I think it was 2010, 2011, and it was just this. It was this pink and grey. Pink top, grey shorts, but it was just one of them kits that was it was just perfect. You know, I think we had a great season and all things went well, and I think we lost in the semi-finals to Swindon in the playoffs, but it was just it was just one of the ones, pink as well. Absolutely loved it at the time. For some reason, I was wearing like pink Ralph Lauren shirts around everywhere. So I don't know what I was thinking of, but yeah, it was. I love that kit. And then I think my first Newcastle kit as well, just because to pull on a Premier League shirt for the first time, obviously, Rich, you'll know, it's like, it's a very special thing. And I think that was the grey one. It wasn't the best kit in terms of looks, but obviously for me, it had a special place because it was the first time I sort of, like, it felt like I'd arrived at that level, at least to start with, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually remember that pink kit. You're right. That was a really iconic kit. And I want to talk to you. We're going to obviously go into real detail on Newcastle because St. James's Park, again, we're going to go into massive detail on that shortly. The last of the three questions that we always ask is, what is your favourite save, most memorable save? And this isn't necessarily the one that got the most publicity because we've all made that save on a Tuesday night that no one remembers in the middle of nowhere, but we remember it because we are the goalkeeping geeks. What has been your most memorable save for you personally?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I think there's two. Probably the best one was at Accrington. We played Kidderminster. My first game on loan, we played Kidderminster in a cup game. I can't remember what it was. It was the Conference Cup or whatever it's called at the time. And I saved the penalty. it wasn't a great save. I just, the guy smashed it down the middle and I saved it with my training leg. But like, it was one of the first things I did. And that set me on the path to sort of having a good season with them. I think I won player of the year. And, you know, looking back now, that was so pivotal because that set me on a path to doing really well there. We won the league, unbelievable set of lads. And that propelled my, I don't know, what would you put, my CV at Cholton as well. So that was the one that I felt was the turning point, you know, going alone, making a penalty save, keeping a clean sheet. Although it wasn't the best penalty save in the world, it was just, it sort of really stuck in my head as like, wow, that's made a huge difference today. And when I looked back on my loan spell, that was the very first sort of bit. Yeah, and then at the end of that season as well, sorry, I know you said one, but it's like you say, as a goalkeeper, it's hard. And we played Woking and we had to win the league. We was already a few points clear, but I think I saved two penalties. I saved one, got retaken, saved that, and then saved the rebound. And it was just one of them periods in time where I could have collapsed on the floor and the striker would have hit it off my face. You know, that is one of them things where I was in such a good place. And for a young goalkeeper, I just felt really like lucky to have good experience, top players at Accrington around me. And when I look back, I'm so grateful because it gave me a platform to push on. Because at 19, 20 years old, you're in a big pool of goalkeepers that, you know, no one knows where you're going. Are you going up? Are you going down? So yeah, probably the Accrington times really when I look back.
It was big, that, wasn't it, Rob, that move for you to go to Accrington? Like we said at the top, that was your first real taste, as you've just said there, of pro football. First time they got back into the league after 44 years. That Woking penalty, by the way, is bonkers. I watched that on YouTube before we came on. It's mad, the fact that he had to retake it and then he retook it and you made the save and then there was one cleared off the line. But I want to ask you, and I don't know whether you've answered this before, I couldn't find the answer anywhere, the Dilsh. So this is the nickname, right? That's continued from your Accrington days. It's your Twitter handle, at the Dilsh.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
It doesn't really mean anything. So obviously, yeah, I think you might add a big Woody on, didn't you? Yeah. And like, he's obviously called me Dilsh. And so when I was at Accrington, Andy Dibble was the goalie coach, absolute legend. And we had a lad there, and I hope I don't do him a disservice, but I think his last name was Dilshan. And he was, bless him, he was a lovely kid, but there weren't much going on upstairs. So he was like, come on, Dilshan, come on, Dilshan. He was a great lad. And then we started calling each other Dilshans, and then the thing Dilsh just come from somewhere. And obviously, when I went back to Cholton, I think Woody was the goalie coach, and I've said something like, oh, what a Dilsh. And he was like, what? And honestly, from that moment, it just sort of stuck. And yeah, I've had a number plate with someone bought me a number plate with the Dilsh for a birthday present, yeah, and stuff like that. And it's sort of gone away a bit now, but then at Newcastle, it sort of faded away. And then John Joe signed and he was like, Dilshy, how are you? And I'm like, oh no, I forgot about that. But it probably sums me up, to be fair. Like, and it's stuck around, and it's one of them things that I get asked, and it's, it's crazy like how stuff like that sticks. And so it started at Accrington. It's just sort of stuck by us. And it's crazy because when I speak to lads that I haven't spoken to for a long time in football, and it'll be like, Dilsh, how are you? And I know straight away and turn around. And it's quite nice because it's probably more from my sort of Accrington and Cholton days early on. And it stuck with us with a few of the few people from Newcastle and them times. But it's not your typical nickname, but it's just something that come from nowhere. And again, just that silly goalie banter, you know. Dibs was brilliant with us when we was at Accrington. Great guy, mentalist himself. But it's another thing that just draws me back to their memories and like just great times.
That's the goalkeeping community right there. We've had him, Andy Dibble, on the podcast. One of the early ones we did, I think the first or second podcast that we had on. He had a few stories to tell. One about having to have skin grafts or something when he dived on the pitch and the lime on the chalk or something. Just bizarre stories that he had.
He must be recycling them because I've heard that one as well. So, but Dibs, like, he's such a funny guy. But what I loved about Dibs, and like Woody's the same as well, is like you have great banter with him and stuff. But when you're working, you work. Do you know what I mean? It's that, like, and I think that's that goalkeeping ritual. You have loads of banter and stuff, but when you're working, you work. You know, like when you're doing your goalie and you get that in, and then as soon as it's finished, you go back to just being mates, having a laugh. And I think I talked about this before. Is like, not to go too far into it, but looking back again, the people I had around me was made such a big difference in my career, you know, to look back and go, actually, these people at these times got a lot to thank them for.
Yeah, well, just touching on that, because you mentioned, I still speak to Andy Dibble quite a lot now, and you mentioned Woody as well. We had on the Insta show that we do, and brilliant value. Like, we had so many people messaging after that, like, brilliant stories. But how important is that for you, having a goalkeeper coach that has that balance? I think there's so many different types of goalkeeper coach. Is it more because of you, how you are as a personality, that you need someone who is quite easygoing, who can allow you to kind of have that fun, but then work when you work? Or do you think that's every goalkeeper coach should have that nice balance?
I think you've got to be yourself, haven't you? So the goalie, I think if the coach tries to be someone they're not, I think that would only last so long. I think ultimately I loved it because Woody especially, like, he sort of gave me the confidence to push. You know, like, when we used to play games when we was in League One or the Championship, he'd be like, if I come up against an experienced keeper, I think even if I played against you, Rich, at the time when he was at Brentford, maybe he'd say, like, right, you need to go out there. And what he used to do a lot of, it was quite clever, he'd say, right, you need to perform on the same level as, say, similar to yourself or Kelvin. Do you remember Kelvin at the time? He was at Southampton. He was like, because these guys have been there, they've done it. You need to be able to perform to that level. Otherwise, that's the bare minimum. Do you know what I mean? And and I think that was good. But the top coaches are the people that I've enjoyed working with. They know when to switch it on and switch it off. And I think goalkeeper is such a pressurised position, right? And especially when you get in the top level, you know, there's so much pressure on you that you don't need to feel that pressure until you have to have it. So for me, it was like training, yeah, when you're doing your bits and bobs. But when it got to a match day, you switch it on, you get yourself ready. But then after that, it's like, okay, you've done your job now. Let's just chill out. Let's not worry about things that have happened. We can dissect them as and when. And sometimes, like a couple of times with Woody, we'd just go and have a chat, you know, we wouldn't train, we'd just walk around having a chat, having a bit of banter, play a couple of like footy golf, because sometimes after a tough period of games, or if he knows you're tired physically or mentally, whatever it is, you take the foot off the pedal for a bit, and I think that's huge. So I think the biggest thing for me, and I've started to do a little bit of coaching, but nowhere near enough to call myself a coach, is I suppose it's learning the goalkeeper you're working with. And I think I was lucky that people that I've worked with have done that. Sometimes I can get ahead of myself and get a bit too worried about things. Then other times I need to stop messing around and train hard. So it's just having people to tell you when you should and when you shouldn't, you know. And that was probably their strengths, just knowing when was the right times.
Something's just occurred to me, gents, and this is genuine. It's genuinely just occurred to me. You mentioned there, Rob, about playing against Rich. And I'm just thinking off the top of my head, and I'm going to get this out of the way early doors, because we don't want to dwell on
this. It's the penalty shootout.
I can't believe it. Did you play in that game?
I see it all over Instagram, mate. Oh, no. I think I saved two. Hey. I think I saved one or two, and literally all I ever see is, like, and to be fair, mate, I'm going to say that absolute worldies. The one from Johnny was ridiculous. And like, it was one of them nights where I can't remember how the games went. It was the JPT, I think. And I think you had a worldie in the game, and then it got to the penalties. And I was like, I was reasonably confident, as we probably both are. And then literally, I think the first penalty is like top corner or bottom corner. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, I felt the pressure. I was like, he's putting me under pressure here. And I think I saved the second or something like that. And I think he saved the first three. And I was like, oh, come on. And I couldn't look over at the lads, because I was looking over thinking, like, I'm not hoping they're not you're putting me under massive pressure here, because I'm thinking, like, I've saved the pen, or I've saved one or two, and I'm thinking, I've let the lads down here. I was like, he's pulled off four worldies in a row, and I've let the lads down.
I was genuinely not even going to mention that on this podcast. I'm so glad you mentioned that, man. So
genuinely, as he was talking then, it just came to me, and I thought you would mention it, to be fair. Do you know what? You are getting some mileage out of that. So Ben Hamer was on the bench for Brentford that day. We've spoken to him about it. Whoever was on the bench for Charlton, whoever was on the bench, I'm sure at some point we'll get him on the podcast.
We'll get him on the podcast. That's what we'll do. Yeah. That's what we'll do. I was going to say, for whatever reason, I don't know if you've got this, there's certain teams I love playing against, and Charlton was just one of those teams. I just felt like every time I played, I loved playing at the Valley. Obviously, when we played them at home as well, it was just one of those teams. I don't know if you've got a team like that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely teams you look back and think you always have good games. Like, obviously, I think Southampton, even in League One, I think maybe it's the better teams, the stronger teams, that you have more to do as a goalie. I used to enjoy playing against them. Little bit of joy against Tottenham. And yeah, I think, like you said, there's teams you dread playing against as well, isn't there? There's the opposite effect where you're like, oh, I've never had a good one. But no, I think we ended up playing you four times, didn't we? I think, and I think you played very well at every one. Now, that was a crazy game, that, because I think it's one of them tournaments. I don't know, did you play in every one? Because the JPT was strange. It was like the managers didn't care, and then you get to the quarters, they're like, right, everyone in, we're going to Wembley, and then you're like, it's a sudden change. It's such a quick change in mentality.
The funny thing for me in that is that I did play the first couple of rounds because that was when Ben Hamer was playing in the first team. And so then it then switched. So I ended up playing every round until we got to the final. And I dislocated my shoulder a week before the final. So I never got to play at Wembley. So I was devastated.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. But you're right. It is that competition. You turn up, I remember we played Leyton Orient in the first round. No joke. I counted the fans because it was the worst game. No one in the stadium. There were 74 people. In the stadium, yeah. It was just like,
and,
yeah.
And I think ours the summer finals, and then it's on Sky, and everyone's there, it's packed out. And I think, like, you do, you turn up for a JPT game in the first round, and you're like, oh, okay, even the stewards aren't turning up. But then, like, you turn up to your game, and there's flares, and you're like, oh my god, it's like walking out in Syria, eh? And it's all going off. No, it was good times. It was one of them ones. It was a like, obviously, it was a different experience for you, but for us with Cheltenham, we like, I think we lost that one, we lost the playoff finals, and yeah, like it's we had a bit of a bad time where we was like so close but then never quite got over the line, but it was great. I remember that. It was a good game. I don't think the actual game itself, nothing really happened, did it? I think the 0-0 just boring as hell, and then it all went off then it all went off in the penalties.
All right, well, we'll move on shall we?
we'll move quickly on.
You had a good time there, of course, at Charlton, essentially a local club. You were born in Greenwich, I believe. So a coup for you, really, to sign for Charlton. We spoke to Nicky Weaver recently, but didn't actually touch on his time at Charlton. We just ran out of time, obviously, talking about Manchester City and Sheffield Wednesday, etc., etc. But when you were first there, or at least coming through the ranks, it was him, yourself and Darren Randolph. That is a solid three-pronged goalkeeping fraternity there.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was me and Daz actually started in the youth team together. So I knew Daz from 16 when I first joined. He'd already agreed to come over from Ireland. Obviously, Daz has gone on to have a brilliant career so far. And we're still mates, still chat. Weaves was just top man, like literally a top man. He come in, did really, really well the first year. The second year, the club sort of nosedived for lots of different reasons. I think I got put in the December, January. And I think, obviously, the team had had a tough time. It weren't necessarily down to Weaves, in all honesty, but I think also he was on good money at the time and they knew he weren't going to be there. And obviously I was a young keeper coming through. But he was brilliant. He, that lesson there from him, like sort of how you treat other goalkeepers and other pros when things don't go your way, was amazing. You know, he gave me so much support, never once moaned and never once showed any sort of like moodiness or anything like that. It's not in his nature anyway. And it was great. It was brilliant for me and it made it so much better. So much easier for me to sort of start my career at Cheltenham, you know, cement my place in the team, become number one. But yeah, when you look back, I think for me, especially having Darren around, was huge because it gave me a chance to. We just pushed each other all the time. I mean, I think we talked about this before. You have that inner drive, but having someone there to compete with that's at such a high level, it pulls you up as well, and you push them, and they pull you, and you pull them, and they push you. And no, we used to like do crossing sessions, we'd smash each other, but it was always respectful. We were still good mates now. And so I think like when you look back again, you see all these little things, and that was huge having Daz, and then having someone who was older with the experience of Weaves, and he was such a ledge as well. You know, he made training so funny in class, but obviously he was like top man in the dressing room, and the way he conducted himself when I went in the team, because it was probably slightly unfair on him as well, was brilliant. And it's a lesson I've learned when I've been dropped, you know, because it happens to all of us. As much as we all like not to get dropped, it happens to everyone. And there's definitely a way you should act. And I think we like epitomised that, and it genuinely did. It was brilliant for me. It was a massive help.
Just on that, because I want to just get your thoughts on this, because it's a question we get asked a lot as to whether it's better having like an outright number one, or you have two goalkeepers that are at a similar level competing with each other. You know, I see it. There's a few good examples of two young goalkeepers coming through together at the same time. You've got it at Sheffield Wednesday with Cameron Dawson and Wildsmith, of course, and they've really pushed each other and the club have kept on to both, and now they form two of the three goalkeepers there. Like, how important has that been for you during your career, even when you've been one or being a two, to have two goalkeepers that are of a similar level in some way so you can really push each other?
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think it's hard. Like, say at the moment, it's with Martin playing, just as an example, Martin's number one. He's cemented that. He's been unbelievable. So you train hard no matter what, but you know you're not really making a dent, because ultimately you could be the best trainer in training by a mile, but if he goes and performs like he does and has a worldie on a Saturday, it's not irrelevant in any sense, but in terms of getting in the team, it's tough. So I think when you know that you've got a genuine opportunity to compete and you know that there's an opportunity there, I think it definitely does help your mindset. But then also, if you're the number one, if you're the one playing, then I think it's different, because you can tailor training and tailor your week for yourself, ready for a game. So it depends. If I'm being completely honest, if you're the number two, you want to be competing and you want it to be close. But if you're the number one, you almost want that breathing space of saying, right, I know I'm the number one. You've got to earn it, obviously. You've got to perform. But I think you almost want to know that you can say, right, well, I know on a Friday I want to do this and this, and on a Thursday. And I think that's the thing. I think that's what's great now. Like, we've got an unbelievable group, me, Carl and Martin. And like, so if Martin says, can we do some crossing over that? I mean, Martin's a great lad. He's not in any way like that. But if Martin's like, do you mind doing some kicking or crossing? You're like, yeah, of course, because he's playing ultimately and we're there to support him. Like, probably from when I first started, the squad of 17, 18 players, to what it is now, 25, if not more. We've had 28 this year, even though 25 can play. You're there to help the squad ultimately and help the team. And you, again, you do what you would expect in return. And I think, like, when I got in the team, I think it's like 2016, I played most of the season before I did my knee. Carl was on the bench most of the time. And he was class. We were good mates anyway. And then, obviously, when I come back from my knee injury, Carl was playing the championship. It was an absolute flames. And I was, like, buzzing, because, one, I want to see him do well. Yeah, I want to get back in the team. But it was almost my chance to do what he needed and make sure I sort of, like, backed him up. You know, and I think I quite enjoy that environment. I like even if you're not playing, I still like to feel like I'm involved and I'm helping, even if it's just 1%. I've not experienced it too much, but I've not really enjoyed the goalies that compete with you on every level all the time. That's not for me. I've got no interest in that, to be honest. I think, like, we're all in it together. The manager makes the decision and the rest of the time it's up to us.
It's interesting you say that, because does that exist? I have to say, in the time that we've done this podcast, whenever I try and sort of get it out of a goalkeeper that maybe there was some competition or some rivalry between them and a number two or number three, everyone's always like, no, we're all friends, we all get on. But have you experienced that yourself then, Rob? You've experienced goalkeepers, you know, as a teammate, who actually a bit of competition there?
Do you know what? Genuinely, not really, no. I think I've been lucky enough to get on with all the lads, you know. I think we're all similar minded, and I think maybe that's because football has changed. It really is a squad game now. Everyone wants to play, and it's obvious. You go through most of the teams, which players are more likely to play or not, but the fact is you can't afford to be like that anymore. Like, that's not how football works. That's not what being a professional is about anymore. And touch wood, I'm just trying to rack my brains in. I'm trying to think, but, like, I mean, even going back to, like, Dean Kiley, Simon Royce, Thomas Myra, they're all just sound, like, when I was at Cheltenham and they were senior keepers, they're all just top guys, you know, like, Weaver, obviously, Beaver, he was class. And then coming to Newcastle, it's great because I've sort of gone from a young lad at 25 and now I'm the oldest one. And you've got to set the example, you know, you've got to be the one to set the example of this is how you conduct yourself and this is how you act around the other goalkeepers. You get a lot more enjoyment from it and you get a lot more out of it yourself if you're come together and work hard as a group than you ever will sort of going on your own and going against people, because it just ultimately, I just don't see that sort of mentality lasting, and it's not something that people want to see either. I think back in the day, maybe when there was like 14, 15 players, then maybe it was a bit different, but I think now, for me, touch wood, I've been quite lucky in that. And also, you want to go work and enjoy yourself. Now, I've not had the best 2 years footballing wise. But to be fair, Martin and Carl, going in, we play two touch every morning, flick each other's ears. Like, it sounds really stupid, but they're the things you start looking forward to. Do you know what I mean? And it's sad, but, like, the thing is, it's like, I can't wait to flick Martin's massive ears. Do you know what I mean? Because that's what you think is like. But, and it's a bit of that environment for 15 minutes before you get flying around. That, do you know, that can make the difference. If you're going in and you're a bit frosty and stuff like that, it's not the same, and you're not going to get more out of it. So, no, I think touch wood. I mean, like, Rich, I don't know if you had different things, but, like, I think from a goalkeeping point of view, I think it's just not worth it, you know?
No, you're spot on. And actually, there's a couple of things I want to mention. And one is the flicking of ears. I want to go into more detail on this because it links into the second part, which is Royce or Rolls. I don't know if you know him as Rolls, but Royce, he was obviously my goalie coach at Brentford. And that was it. Every day you play two touch. And then what ends up happening is because you know you get to flick the ears of the loser, you then start to practice your flicks. And genuinely, I'll be going home and I'll be how can you get as much power into a flick as you possibly can? When you get that cold morning in January when it's freezing cold and you nail that flick, it's the best feeling.
Oh, yeah, especially as well. Like, you get rivalries. So, like, it's brilliant now. Like, And it's one of them ones where we've got to the point where lads are taking a run up with the flicks now. Do you know what I mean? It's getting close to like Martin at one point, honestly, he flicked me in like, not on the outside of me, he flicked my inner ear. Do you know, like the little, bit? And I literally like, don't you think I'm going to hit him here? And so the next time it was his turn, like you're taking the run up, you're sort of half jabbing him with a flick. It's great, like, because you're thinking it's great. But then the thing is, when you're playing two touch, the pressure's on because when people are firing it in at you, and you're like, oh Jesus Christ, because I'm on two lives, and you know that, like, and the thing is, the circle suddenly changes because when you're the one and two lives, you start realizing the ball comes to you every other turn. You give it back to someone, it's coming straight at you. So it's great, and they like you say, it's. It suddenly becomes the big, like, it's a little competitive part of your day, but it's something that, again, even between your peers, you don't want to lose. You want to be the one flicking.
It's something that probably nobody will understand that's not in the goalkeeping fraternity, but there's nothing more frustrating than going for your flick and missing, doing like a missed flick.
Yeah. Oh, it's the worst thing in the world.
If you waste your flick, then that can ruin a morning.
Yeah. And how buzzing are you when someone misses? You know, you just feel a bit of wind from your ear and you just go off, oh, hey! But like you said, January the 1st when it's -2 and someone's flicking your ear. But like Darlow, to be fair to him, Darlow, when it's warm, he often like does it without his gloves on. So like we sort of went through that phase where people would sneak and not put their gloves on and then you'd be flicking with a bare finger. Now that's different. That's another level, that. Yeah, well, I've got one for you, right? You've got the one we used to do at Cheltenham with Woody and Dad. We used to do the shotgun. So basically, the last one would be a double ear flick. So you basically get someone's head and you can flick both ears at the same time. Now, that one, if you caught that right, that was like, Joe, you didn't even have to train. You could just go home knowing your day was done. if you shotgun someone both ears, like proper flick, proper ping them, especially when it's cold. You didn't need to train. It's like, that's me done for the day. I've got everything I need, lads. I'll see you tomorrow.
Amazing. The shotgun.
Rob Elliott and Richard Lee there discussing ear flicking more so than anything else. If you'd like to hear more where that came from, please do visit our new Patreon channel. There you can find the extended interview with Rob, in which he continues discussing his time at Charlton and Newcastle, life under Alan Pardew and Rafa Benitez, and just what his career holds next. We're going to be updating Patreon as the weeks go on with additional content analysis and general goalkeeping chat. It's also now going to be the permanent new home of our Between the Sticks podcast, which returns alongside football's return from COVID-19. Patreon will be the only place where you can listen to that and plenty more. So visit patreon.com/goalkeepersunion or goalkeepersunion.net and navigate your way to the Join GKU tab for more details. We'll see you next time.